Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Now, we've been talking about hospital delays and your experiences at hospitals right across the country. On the show, actually, quite a lot recently. And I saw 20 of the country's leading cancer doctors and researchers have actually contacted the government. They've sent a fairly alarming letter. What they say should serve as a wake-up call to government about the impact of a delay in a cancer diagnosis. And one woman who knows more about this than anyone, Donna Marie, got in touch to share her story. Thanks for joining us today, Donna Marie, on the programme. Will you just take us back and tell us a little bit about your experience?
Hiya, how's it going?
Good.
Thanks very much for having me on the show. Yeah, so my cancer journey began back in September 2019. My second baby, he was only 7 weeks old, and I discovered a lump on my temporal region, ironically from taking a selfie with the baby. My temporal region. So it would be between your eye and your ear. So you know sometimes when people are stressed, they put their fingers to their temporal region, they give it a little rub to try and de-stress themselves. So it's right on that area there. I presented myself to the GP then after finding this lump on the temporal region, and Janie Mac, many, many confused doctors finally had a CT done, and they discovered that I had a huge tumour on my temporal region. So it kind of began from there. I found it very, very, very difficult to get to see any consultant. The journey was very lengthy. I actually presented myself in A&E at one stage because I was in so much pain. I had severe headaches. I had pain all down the side of my head, down into my neck. And I remember meeting a consultant in the A&E department, and he was just baffled, didn't know what to do, didn't know what to say, came up with this random diagnosis and kind of sent me packing. And I just felt that's not enough. Mm. So I kept fighting and kept fighting and kept fighting. And I really think I was a young, vulnerable woman. I had just had my second baby. I should have been in this beautiful baby bubble, but I was fighting just to get a doctor to look at me to see what this tumour was. So it was really, really a long struggle.
And sorry, at that point, Donna Marie, had you'd heard the word tumour, had you?
I had. So when I had gone back to, when I had gone to the GP, I went for a CT scan. So you can imagine the look on their faces when they're doing a CT scan of someone's head. An ultrasound, on my head. And it was at that stage where they could see an encapsulated large tumour on my temporal region. So it was in behind my cheekbone, up near my eye and up in towards my ear.
And aside from, you know, you noticing this yourself, or it was by taking a selfie. A picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought I had great cheekbones, but in actual fact, I actually looked very gaunt looking. And it was because the tumour was at the top of my cheekbone and just, you know, elongating my cheekbone. So I didn't really have great cheekbones in the end.
Right. But had you any other symptoms or, you know, signs aside from you noticing this yourself visibly?
Yeah, I did have headaches, but I had secondary pain. So because the tumour was pushing my jawbone out of place, I had quite a lot of pain on the other side of my face, and I had a lot of headaches as well.
So you had the ultrasound, you got the diagnosis that this was a tumour. Tell us a little bit about the plan or the treatment plan and how long that took.
Well, ironically, it took a full 12 months to be told that this gigantic tumour on my head was actually cancer. And there was many characteristics that kind of interrupted that. So, like I said, I presented myself in A&E, struggled to get an appointment with a consultant. It was months later before I seen a consultant. And then I think we were pushing into maybe the February, the March before they were looking at possibly doing a biopsy. And then COVID hit and theatre shut. So obviously during COVID, then everybody was in lockdown. We were all stuck at home. Mm. I was just watching this cancerous tumour get bigger, but literally by the day it was getting bigger on my head. But I did what most people probably wouldn't do. I sent an immense amount of emails to consultant secretaries with photographs and called so many secretaries just to see if I could get a consultant to look at me. I'd sent the ultrasound picture. I sent pictures of myself. You could visibly see this tumour sticking outside my head. But I just spent months and months and months trying to get myself out with a consultant. So obviously I discovered the tumour in September 2019. I didn't get my biopsy until the 1st of September 2020. And then it was 22 days later when the consultant called me in and said, I'm very sorry, Donna Marie, but you have Ewing sarcoma, a very rare and aggressive form of cancer.
And I'm sure the you know, on hearing that, Donna Marie, it just floors people.
It does. And a lot of people always ask me, how did you feel when you heard the words, yeah, you have cancer? And I find it impossible to put words to how I felt. And the only way I can describe it is that my response to the consultant was, okay, what's next? What happens next?
Yeah, into fight mode.
Absolutely. And I feel, you know, we all know that early detection has an incredible impact on saving lives. I discovered this 12 months previous. I did everything right. Mm. I followed all the guidelines. I did everything correct. But I had to fight and fight and fight just to get a diagnosis. And I feel once you're in the system, you may have a little bit of a better chance of treatment, but it's getting into that system that is absolutely impossible. And I really feel that if I didn't have the determination and the drive to keep fighting to get this biopsy done, I really don't know what state I would have been left in afterwards. Mm. I was very, very lucky and shockingly, actually, that the cancer hadn't metastasized and spread through the body. Because it was rare, it was very aggressive. So it was some form of a miracle that I hadn't spread through my body. But I honestly believe if I hadn't fought, I wouldn't have got that diagnosis.
I was just going to say that, you know, you really became your best, your own activist and lobbyist, really, Donna Marie, you know, in fighting to be seen. The thing that struck me, though, in chatting to you, like, this was even pre-COVID.
Yeah, it did initially start pre-COVID. Yeah, it began pre-COVID, and pre-COVID kind of put the brakes on everything. But bear in mind, I mean, consultants were still doing over the phone consultations. I couldn't even get that.
And when you were contacting the secretaries and trying to get in touch with consultants, and were you hearing anything back at that stage? Was the response just that it's COVID? We're not operating the same level of services. Like, what kind of response were you getting back?
Well, the secretaries were all really lovely, and I must say, I did build up a lovely relationship with them. But the restriction was they just didn't have the time slots, and they were trying to figure out how they were going to operate in such a difficult time. But they didn't have the normal amount of patients coming through the door, but they still couldn't facilitate because they didn't have the time and they didn't have the resources.
So where are you in the journey now, Donna Marie?
Thankfully, I'm in remission. I had approximately 12 months of treatment. I had a very hefty chemotherapy regime. I used to spend 1 week out of every three receiving chemotherapy as an inpatient. Okay. So it was like 5 days of continuous infusions, which was obviously very, very difficult.
Very intense.
Then I had a surgery. It was about approximately 8.5 hours of a surgery. That in itself was extremely difficult because finding a surgeon who, number one, was willing to take this on, and number two, had the capacity to actually do the surgery was very, very difficult. Now, I was very lucky in the sense that I did have my surgery in February 2021 to remove the tumour successfully. And then I did 6 weeks of radiation in St. Luke's in James's. Mm. And even though I've always been under the care of absolutely incredible medical professionals, from nurses all the way up to consultants, they struggled massively. It was just so difficult for them to actually take care of patients with the amount of constraints that they were up against.
Yeah. Just it's you know, the waiting lists are something that we hear so much about from people.
Absolutely. And I felt that because I was a patient with active cancer, and, you know, time is of the essence, they did treat me. And obviously they do treat me incredibly well because I'm now in remission. But the struggle to just get there. And then after your active cancer has been removed, I'm back to the stage where I'm finding it so difficult to get treatment. I have quite a lot of post-cancer surgeries to reconstruct part of my head. I mean, as you can imagine, they removed a huge tumour from my face and you know, the huge surgery that I went through, and then all the radiation I had. Like, my face was left in an awful state. But my plastic surgeons are absolutely fantastic. And they perform just wonderful surgeries. Mm. But the problem is, getting me into the theatre is a huge issue. So my last surgery would have been September 2022. And the plan was that I would get surgeries done maybe every 4 to 6 months so they can rebuild the whole area on my head to prevent further issues down the line and to help with pain management and basically reconstruct part of my head. I make a patchwork quilt, like part of my arm is on my head, my stomach is in my head, my leg is on my arm. But in order to maintain all of that, there are a lot of lengthy surgeries. But the amount of times I've had phone calls from my consultant secretary to tell me or to apologise to say that my surgery couldn't go ahead. And basically it's down to the lack of staffing and the inability to actually get access to theatres.
Yeah, the theatre space and then having enough and the right theatre staff to be able to staff the surgery. And like that's got to be very disheartening for you, Donna Marie, when you've waited and you've built up the momentum and you've got that appointment and the date, and then you get the call to say we've got to stall it.
Yeah, it's very sad. And I mean, I think the one thing that takes the sting out of it for me is that active cancer patients obviously take priority, which I was an active cancer patient and I had to take priority, and I fully understand that. But in the back of my mind, I always wonder who is missing out on a biopsy or who is missing out on post-cancer surgery to help them. And some of the elective surgeries, like they're very well much needed, like they're part of your cancer treatment.
I know they're elective, but I know what you mean. They mightn't be seen as emergency, but they're absolutely required. It's not just cancer waiting lists that we talk about on this program, and that's something that you know about as well, Donna Marie, even with your own son.
Yeah, so the baby that was 7 weeks old, actually, when I initially got the cancer diagnosis, he suffers severely with his ears and he has severe hearing loss. So there's a very, very simple surgery that can be done to help him. But it took me 18 months on a waiting list just to see a consultant. And now whether it's public or private, it's 18 months of a waiting list. Yeah, I know he's waiting to get surgery done on both of his ears. And while his consultants and the surgeons are absolutely beautiful people, they're fantastic people, they're really, really helpful, they just can't get him into surgery because the wait lists are so long. You know, they've given us an average time frame, but they've also said we need to put in brackets beside that. We have to be realistic, and that's the goal, but it's actually not what's going to happen.
Okay. And in the meantime, you know, what is the impact of that on him, Donna Marie?
Well, he does have severe hearing loss and he's in place good at the moment and he's due to start school in September. The impact of it, that it can have on any children with hearing loss is, you know, behavioural issues, sleeping issues, their own discomfort, their own frustrations. And, you know, our little boy is such a good little boy, but you can't help looking at him and see the frustration that he has every day. I mean, we're a musical family. Music is a huge part of our family. And even when you try to have a conversation with him, or he responds to you by shouting at you. And it is heartbreaking to see the discomfort that he sits in. And it's a simple procedure. It will take less than an hour to do the surgery, but you just can't access the theatre time.
And the space in the theatre. Yeah, I mentioned at the start of this that a number of 20 of the different cancer doctors and researchers across the country have actually contacted government, sent a letter to them warning of these delays and issues. And I suppose really a lot of it probably due to a lack of funding as well. But a lot of the issues you've highlighted around just being able to access theatre space, the staffing too, be able to resource all of that. But like, you are the example, unfortunately, Donna Marie, that, you know, that these doctors, they don't want to be talking about. But listening to your story and your son's story today, it's absolutely heartbreaking. Look, just finally and personally about yourself, how are you feeling now? Like, I know you're in remission, but how are you getting on at the moment?
I'm in remission. I'm feeling good. I'm doing good. I'm very grateful, you know, to be in remission and to be the other side of the initial cancer treatment itself. Yeah. Like, but it's very frustrating. Very frustrating. It really is frustrating. And you go into hospital and you see all these nurses and doctors that you've been taken care of by years, and you just see the low morale, the struggles, the strains, the stresses, and you know that's a lasting impact with you, and it almost sends you into PTSD every time you go in to have even just a checkup done or a simple procedure done, because it brings you back to the days of when you're in hospital having, you know, active cancer treatment, and you see the stress and the strain that the nurses feel. And like, while I do see that the government are aiming to recruit staff, it's an extremely undesirable industry to work in. So, you know, sometimes you have to look at that as well and think, well, you want to recruit staff, but what are you recruiting staff into? The industry is just, it's a mess at the moment, but the staff are doing the best that they can. But they just, the amount of constraints that they're faced with is awful.
It's you're even the fact you've gone through your treatment and absolutely everything and remission now, like you're basically still fighting, Donna Marie. You're where you were nearly back in 2019. You're still banging doors down.
Yeah, Yeah, pretty much.
Well, look, I wish you the best of luck, and it's great
Thanks
to talk
much.
To you. Yeah, on the show today, and you know you're incredibly positive. You've a super great attitude, and really appreciate your time. And thanks for sharing your own story and your son's story as well with us here too on Lunchtime Live.
Brilliant.
Yeah, not at
Thanks
all. Mind yourself, Donna Marie.
It's
Lunchtime Live at newstalk.com as always. That's the email address if you want to get in touch or share your own story or experience here with us on the programme.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.